Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the second of three press conferences during the June General Assembly here in Baltimore. I'm Judy Keene, Director of Public Affairs for the USCCB, and welcome. Joining me today is Bishop Burbidge from the Diocese of Arlington. To my immediate left, he is also the chairman for the USCCB Committee on Communications, and he will be introducing our panelist. Bishop Burbidge.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you again for your presence. I hope our conversation and responses to any of your questions will be helpful to you and to your work. As Judy mentioned, joining me on the panel today, to my left is Bishop Frank Duane, the Bishop of the Diocese of Venice, Florida, and also the Chairman of the Committee on Domestic Justice and Human Development. Bishop Duane today may be able to address directly any of the questions on our discussion with faithful citizenship. Next to Bishop Duane is Archbishop Vigneron. Alan Vigneron, the Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Detroit. He's also the Secretary of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops and the Chairman of the Committee on Priorities and Plans. So we had our discussion today, as you're aware, on the strategic plan of the conference from 2021 to 2024. Archbishop Vigneron would be available to discuss that topic. And we also have with us today Bishop Robert Barron, the Auxiliary Bishop of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, the Chairman of the Committee on Evangelization and Catechesis. His committee proposed some language regarding the death penalty. And also Bishop Barron gave a wonderful, engaging presentation yesterday on how bishops can continue the work of evangelization, especially in our outreach to those who are unaffiliated. And so I'm sure Bishop Barron will be available to elaborate further on that presentation also. Okay. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you so much, Bishop. So with that, we will go ahead and open the floor for questions. As of yesterday, if you have a question, kindly raise your hand, and then I'll choose you, and if you will just state your name, who you're with, and to whom you are addressing your question, it would be appreciated. We also have two microphones on each side of the room, so also wait for the microphone so that we can be sure to hear your question. Thank you so much. And with that, we'll open the floor for our first question. Don't all raise your hands at once. Okay, great, good. Okay, Mark. Mark from CNS.
Mark Patterson from CNS, also known as the gentleman from CNS. I have a question for Archbishop Vigneron regarding priorities and plans. One of the subheads of one of the priorities, and is probably one of the more entangled, you know, with using more church language, and I have to get to it, but it says, here it is. Articulate a convincing anthropology of the human person, male and female, as proclaimed by faith and affirmed by science and right reason. And I wanted to ask you to, in layman's terms, if possible, give an example of how right reason is used to affirm some finding, you know, that we hold dear in church, and perhaps the lay faithful aren't aware that right reason is one of the undergirding principles to that.
If I could pick up on Bishop Barron's presentation, where he talked about it isn't sufficient for us to simply make the proclamation of Christ and the mysteries of faith, but we need to clear away a lot of misunderstandings, what he referred to as apologetics. And so the point here is that we need to make our case about the understanding of the human person that certainly is part of our faith, but it also has a basis in reason. And so that reason can be scientific reason. It can be a reason about ethics, making a case for a society that flourishes. And so right reason is a kind of, as you say, church word. It's part of our culture. It often refers to a sound ethical thinking about what creates a healthy human being and a healthy human society. An example we might use to make our case about this is the sociological data about families. That would be an example that we could use.
Great. Next question. Just over here in the back, the woman in the back with her hand up, pink shirt.
Hi, I'm Christine Roussel from Catholic News Agency. Bishop Barron, I was intrigued yesterday when you talked about your experience on Reddit as a tool for evangelization, because people don't generally associate Reddit with anything positive. So on Reddit, in addition to communities like Our Catholicism, Our Christianity, and other subreddits, there's also Our Atheism, like r/, it's how you call it, subreddit, for anyone who's not familiar with Reddit, Our Ex-Catholic, Our Ex-Christian, all these other things. How would you basically try to prevent a young person who's typically at the age that would be leaving the church from stumbling onto those communities and basically falling into a rabbit hole of anti-Catholic propaganda?
Well, that's always a possibility with that kind of website. It's part of the shadow side of social media. What I did with Reddit is once I heard about it and knew they were open to my being part of it, I thought, well, why not? I mean, I've been using YouTube for a long time, Facebook and Instagram, lots of different places. And once I heard about Reddit, I thought, well, let's give it a go. So, I mean, all these things carry a shadow side. My experience on it was very positive. I announced myself as a Catholic bishop who loves dialoguing with atheists. That's how I set it up. As I mentioned to the bishops, I think it was 12,500 comments and questions came in a matter of about an hour and 10 minutes. So there was an extraordinary interest. And, you know, I've heard an awful lot of these, concerns and questions over the years. So nothing was particularly, you know, shocking to me. There were a lot of positive things, a lot of positive engagement. So, I mean, that's the thing with the social media. It's always a both and. It's always both good and bad. I found that to be a very fruitful, mode of discourse. But sure, I would warn people against, going onto those things in a totally unmonitored way. But I think the church has got to be present in that world, which is where a lot of, especially younger people, live.
Okay, great. Next question, the young lady in the back here. Thanks.
I'm Regina Garcia with Associated Press. Bishop Burbidge, as you are in charge of communications, I know one of the bishops earlier kind of joked about taking billboards on the, on the freeway to publicize the headline or the website, the third-party reporting system. But aside from, putting it on, or talking about it in church, is the church planning some sort of campaign to, publicize this, especially in communities where there are known issues and that based on, age of possible victims, they may not necessarily, be going to the church's website or may need to, they may instead pick up a paper, I don't know.
Sure. We're a mechanism like that is to be made available and clearly how people would engage that particular instrument, third-party reporting system, whatever, is our job to make that well known. I think another bishop commented so well that it's really not that difficult to get the word out. Dioceses, parishes use their own diocesan website. They use their diocesan newspaper. They use various means to get to make this as clear as possible. This is for you. This is for your use. And so as we move forward, that will certainly be part of the strategy.
Okay, next question. Gentleman in the back here.
My question's for Bishop Barron. In light of your wonderful presentation that was so well received by your brothers yesterday, discussing the various unaffiliated and the growing number of young people who are leaving the church, and combined with your marvelous letter to a suffering church that recently came out, I was wondering if you could give a message of hope to young people in light of the current crisis so that this isn't a reason that they leave.
Yeah, good, thank you. Part of what prompted that book was precisely the poll that came out just a few months ago that said 37% of Catholics were considering leaving the church because of the crisis. And I must say that got my attention. Now, we could look at that poll and say it's accurate to varying degrees, but still it got my attention, meaning this thing has gotten deeply into people's souls, and especially young people. The word of hope I give, I'd say twofold. One is the church has been wrestling with this issue at an administrative level pretty successfully after 2002 We're wrestling with the latest instantiation of it right now. So I think we are taking important steps to deal with it there. But more importantly, I would say, is the treasure the church has in earthen vessels, as Paul saw. I mean, so throughout its history, the treasure has been borne by earthen vessels, but we stay because of the treasure. And the treasure is, I say, especially to young people, we speak of God. And what I find with young people is this Augustinian hunger, I call it, you know, the restless heart. And everyone knows that. No matter how much the world gives you in terms of wealth and power and honor and whatever, it does not satisfy the heart. And I see young people all the time who are dying spiritually because of that. That the church, with all of our flaws and with all of our imperfections and sin, we still speak of God in this culture that's increasingly secularized. That's part of the treasure, that we speak of Jesus Christ crucified and risen from the dead. We speak of an eschatological hope, a hope even beyond this life. I mean, that's what people are. They've always been hungry for that. They still are. And the church, again, with its flaws, continues to bear that treasure to the world. And that's where our hope lies.
Great. Thank you. Gregor Lanson.
Hi, just to follow up, Bishop Barron. After your comments, at least my social media, as well as other texts, and I'll blow up on Jordan Peterson, who I didn't know much about at all. And there's been some people who see him as kind of an icon of the anti-political correctness movement, and some see him as anything up to and including being a white supremacist or supporting male chauvinism and all that. I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit more about what you find attractive about him and how you might answer critics.
Yeah, as I said to the bishops, you know, as I introduced that little piece, it was not by any means an endorsement of everything Jordan Peterson says or stands for. I happen to like a lot of things he stands for. I think he's a very interesting player. I disagree with other things in Jordan Peterson. But what I was drawing attention to is what I call the Peterson phenomenon. The fact that you've got someone in the public space who is speaking in a pretty intellectually serious way about important matters of you know, depth psychology, but even touching upon spirituality. And the fact, I said, that he's now talking about the Bible and attracting tens of thousands to arenas and attracting millions online. Someone talking about the Bible in a way that actually is pretty good. I mean, I think what he's developing there is close to what the church fathers would have called the moral sense of the scripture. So not a keen sense of the supernatural dimension, but the human element of the Bible. He's pretty good, I think, at articulating that. And by the millions, young people are responding. So my message to the bishops was not go out and read Jordan Peterson. It was pay attention to the phenomenon of Jordan Peterson, that we too should be able to speak at a high level about our own great text, the Bible, in a way that young people will find compelling. It's also part of my campaign against dumbing down our faith. Now, for two generations, we've so dumbed down the operation. Jordan Peterson is not pandering intellectually to young people. So that's what I wanted people to see. It wasn't so much the content of his thought, which we could debate about, and I wasn't so much committed to that, but just the phenomenon of Peterson as an online reality.
Okay, and the gentleman right here, red tie. Thank you.
Peter Feuerherd with the National Catholic Reporter. Bishop DeWayne, what came up in yesterday's meetings was a discussion of the immigration issue. And one of the bishops, who I did not get his name, talked about the importance of holding Catholic politicians to the church's standard on what they should believe about immigration. And especially in light of what the Pope is all about and how this has been a priority for him. How come so many Catholic politicians are pretty much ignoring the humane and justifiable views of the church in favor of what can only be called this Trumpistic attack on immigrants, many of whom are almost all, a large majority of them are Catholics? My question is, are bishops going to take a stand on this in the sense that they do, some bishops do on abortion in terms of maybe forbidding politicians to receive communion, or taking a strong stand to say this is doctrinal teaching of the church that all Catholics have an obligation to try to do something positive about the immigration issue?
I think what you've seen is the Bishops Conference has come out in the past with a document focusing on forming faithful citizenship. And the idea of conscience, the idea of moral choice there, doing good, avoiding evil, some of the premises that underline the document. Also, a number of issues are dealt within that document, and the conference decided to take the body from 2015, put together for that election, and move it forward, but with it, put a new introductory note and also do some videos that will be out there. I think in these, you will see certainly the desire to reinvigorate the Catholic teaching within the populace, particularly the Catholic groups, but to look at what is Catholic social teaching. And it has a whole series of issues that it looks at and identifies. The positions taken by the church are not always popular, you know, but it's guided by moral teaching, a moral truth. What I noted earlier, the idea of the dignity of the human being. And so I don't think it's correct to look at, well, some of them speak for this. Yeah, we know where the votes are. We just saw something in the political arena that evidenced that clearly. So I stand for this, and next day, no, I stand for something else. Well, the church has not changed its stance over the years on a number of issues and stands up for the dignity of the human person, stands up whether that person is on death row, whether they're still in the womb, whether they're an immigrant. We speak out on that repeatedly. Not always popular. It can't change our speaking out.
Great. Have time for probably a few more questions. Yes, gentleman right here in the front. Oops, there, wait for the mic there. Thank you.
Enrique Soros with the Latin American Bishops Council for Bishop Barons too. I think it was a fresh air when you spoke about evangelization, catechesis, after so many technical things which are very essential, yeah? But this is touching, I think, the heart of the church and the pastoral work of the bishops and of the Christians. And knowing that half of the Catholics that are leaving the church, half are 13 years old as an average, you as a chair of the Committee of Evangelization and Catechesis, do you think something should change? For example, there is a communicator who described the way of communicating of Pope Francis saying, he goes and he listens, and then he has something to say. Are we going to listen to know the youth, what are they feeling, listening to them, dancing with them, so loving them first and then giving them the information?
Yeah, I was at the Youth Synod, you know, back in October, and that issue came up a lot because of all the Pope's stress on accompaniment and listening and so on. And we often use the Emmaus account. So Jesus joins in an unobtrusive way, in a sort of non-threatening way, and he just walks with these erstwhile disciples. So all of that, I thought, caught beautifully what the Pope emphasizes, that first he does that. First he walks with and listens and so on. So what, you know, tell me, what are you talking about as you go? And that's a beautiful thing, as we have to listen to young people. What are you talking about? By the way, one reason I like to get on the social media, what are you talking about as you go on your way? But then we insisted back in October that at that key moment, Jesus then begins to speak and even calls them fools and you don't understand, and then begins to explain to them, and then their hearts begin to burn within them. And the point is that that's the rhythm of the church's catechetical work, that you're quite right. It is that lovely back and forth between listening, walking with, in a sort of non-judgmental way, but then also speaking the truth clearly. You know, I've talked about dumbing down the faith. This is where it comes in. The church should speak to young people in a way that respects their intelligence, that responds to the questions they really have. And I can tell you easily, after 20 years of doing this work online, I tell you exactly what the questions young people have are. Good. We listen, and then we respond with what the church, the treasure the church has, intellectually, spiritually. So it's that lovely rhythm. And if you just do one or the other, you're going to miss the, you know, the power of it. You know.
Great. Carol.
Hi. Carol Zimmerman with Catholic News Service. Some of us here have been to so many bishops' meetings over the years, and obviously you've been to so many. And this spring just has such a different feel to it from the usual spring meetings, which are a lot not as intense. And I'm just wondering, from your perspective, how do you think this is going so far? And do you feel a sense of that this is that you're accomplishing what you wish to do? And do you feel a sense of urgency, I guess?
Yes, you're right. Usually the June meeting is not as heavy of an agenda as far as items. There's more pastoral discussion at the June meetings, where the November meeting has consistently been the one with the heaviest agenda, the most issues to discuss. So there's definitely a different feel for it. I think that we're here and in Baltimore this week because of that sense of urgency. We have important work to do. It's been repeated at our regional meetings this morning, our provincial meetings. It's been said on the floor even a couple of times today. This work is essential, it's urgent, and we must accomplish it. I'm really pleased with that sense of momentum that we have here. Tomorrow will certainly be an important day with the hope of accomplishing our work, but definitely a sense of urgency. We know how important this is.
Okay, I think we've got time for maybe one more question, so let's go. We'll go with JD. Maybe we can get to you over there in the right-hand corner too, and then I think we'll wind things up.
Bishops, thank you. J.D. Flynn, Catholic News Agency. In anticipation of your discussion tomorrow and in light of your discussion this afternoon, one thing that I have been wondering about, it occurs to me that we keep hearing the word transparency, but I wonder if bishops are using it and the people of God are using it in different ways, or there are different expectations within the church about what that word is. So can you just talk a little bit about what transparency is? What do you mean when you talk about it?
Who are you addressing the question to? Okay.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, JD. Well, transparency is centered around communication. We all know that what's most effective in any relationship is a healthy communication. And so it is with a bishop and his diocesan family. And let's have a healthy communication. Let's be able to give information, updates on whatever the issue may be as frequently as we can, but always mindful of the fact that no matter what the issue may be, there is also a boundary in the sense of confidentiality. You know, as much as you would like to tell everything about a certain situation, even if it's personnel, whatever, you're bound to a confidentiality. You're also bound to due process. You're also bound to be respectful of all the parties involved. So many times it would be, if there's a complicated issue, is you could say, I could solve this right away if only I could say this, but I can't because of confidentiality, because of due process. But I think we all agree, we know the relationship will be stronger the more transparent we can be and frequently communicating. But maybe my brother bishops would want to add to that.
I would add, as I think about my own responsibility, I feel that even though the lay people I work with, I have to bear the responsibility in the end for the leadership of my particular church, I am obliged morally to give an account of my leadership. And I'm willing to say to people, this is as much as I can say, but I will give you an account for the decisions I've made insofar as I can. And so I think accountability, and I would prefer rather, I should go back, I don't want to use accountability. I think giving an account for one's decisions is a form of transparency.
Okay, great. A final question right over here, and tell us who you're with as well.
Good evening. Paul Gessler with CBS Baltimore. Just kind of in the general sense for whomever wants to field the question, this third-party reporting system, can you kind of give a practical sense of how you see that being used, a timetable, and how you hope that stems the disease of sex abuse in the church?
So if I maybe invite my brother bishops to add to it, but the third-party system is another mechanism another mechanism given to the people to report concerns, allegations against a bishop. So we believe this will enhance what we already are doing and give this new means of doing it. In the meantime, and again, I'll use the word sense of urgency again, we heard it from the floor today, this needs to be in place, it must be in place by May 31st next year. We all said from the floor today, we have to try our very best to have all these details worked out way before that. This is so important. But in the meantime, it is very important for the faithful to know that any concerns, whether it be against a bishop, a priest, whatever, some mechanisms are still right there. You know, if you need to call the civil authorities, call the civil authorities. You need to call the metropolitan with a concern, call the metropolitan. The third-party system will be another way that you can do that. But anyone else?
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, this will conclude our press conference today. We will have another press conference tomorrow. That will occur after that morning session ends. So typically we have them about 10-15 minutes after that.